was obsolete, but I show you where I am well ahead of everybody, catching up. Moving you to a catch-up position to where McLuhan and Finnegan's Wake already was.
Mm-hmm. Throwing the ball. Okay, so continuing the printed page.
You know, here's the point. So she's talking about how the new acoustic electric media gets you to plug into your other senses.
Yeah.
Well, the Android meme is not getting you to plug into your other senses. That was already done before the Android meme. The Android meme is plugging into its own parts.
Yes.
Extending its own part. That's a whole different level of operation that leaves the chemical body sidelined.
Yeah. And people feel the lack. They feel the lack.
Right. So McLuhan retrieved the chemical body as a supreme art form, but he was warning the world, hey, we're going discarnate. We're going into some living organism that's a monster. We're not at all prepared for that. We're not even going to be Christians in that environment.
Yeah.
You can't have ethics.
Yeah. Yeah. Lamberti continues, the printed page was no longer a one-dimensional feast for the eye.
Wait, I need to see where you are. Okay, I got you. Yeah, the printed page
was no longer a one-dimensional feast for the eyes. It became the interface for a more involving tactile experience.
Or synesthesia.
McLuhan's words of freedom.
In freedom. That's a quote. McLuhan's words in freedom.
Aim to achieve a similar type of experience, and his mosaic style of writing becomes an interactive tool that teaches you by undoing your linear expectations. That is, by letting you experience his mosaic montage process and refusing to let you study him and his text in a linear way. Again, that's repetition, but it's...
Yeah, let me show you what she's missing.
Yeah.
If I was writing this, I'd say this. That the Android meme begins in 1960 as a hidden ground. And it hoiks up McLuhan, Zappa, Thompson, Croker. All these people get hoiked up over the next 20, 30 years. It's the Android meme doing synesthesia on itself. And all these points that she's making that McLuhan added to the book were already acted out by the dadaists, the surrealists, and all the artists of the World War One.
Right.
And, so that was the last gasp of the chemical body trying to adapt to the effect of electricity and maybe even the emptying of the guff that had started. So you have a lot of involvement with the occult. So the McLuhan is hoiked up by the Android meme so that people think that what the Android meme is doing to itself, that's hidden by having some guy replay the 1910s and the art movements of the vortices, and to get people to think, oh, yeah, we're just learning how to be what Wyndham Lewis and those guys were.
Mm.
We're catching up, thanks to McLuhan. And it's a distraction by the Android meme.
Mm-hmm.
And even Zappa said in the early 70s, someone asked him, and he said, yeah, I'm just a computer image. He said that. And he said, the media is all there is. So this science fiction thing that's happening... So I would write this, I would say this book is the Android meme in its last gasp, replaying McLuhan, because it's pretty accurate in terms of what McLuhan is, for those that still think they got a chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
No, for those parts of the Android meme that act out the meme of being a book. That's what this book is for.
Those parts of what?
Of the Android meme, which includes all analog media interpenetrating.
Yeah.
All those old media environments, it's melting them, interpenetrating them, allowing each one to have a whole world, Baroque spirals, you know, millions of books. Look at your Kindle. so everything is in superabundance on behalf of the Android meme.
Mm-hmm.
So there are going to be parts of the Android meme that specialize and making sure you don't recognize what I just said. So they're going to replay McLuhan through a book like this for young kids and millennials going to university.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a genuine fake. Squared. Now, McCoker goes into the terminology for this, and he calls it recombinant commodity. The experience that Lamberti's trying to give through this book is a recombinant commodity experience. It has to have the genetic metaphor, because the genetic cellular situation is what the Android meme actually is. And genetics have gone and left the chemical body and dove into the cybernetic world to be part of those machines.
Mm-hmm.
Our genetics, our cells have left us. This is what Coker says 25 years ago. So you have to start thinking, these are way more extreme aphorisms than McLuhan came up with.
Right, and she's still working with the literate environment turning into an electric environment and how people are coping with that. But
and she knows there's a post-human thing, but she doesn't know we're so far into the post-human that Ion showed up
mm-hmm.
because we had blown the post-human phase mm-hmm. and we're a wreck.
Mm-hmm. So she goes into, in the following paragraphs, the new electric and electronic media. I don't even know if she talks about Twitter at all. I should search for that.
Yeah, this is written in 2012. That's 6 years ago.
Okay.
I think Twitter gets into people about 2014, 2015, but wow. I'm not sure. But,
mm-hmm.
She doesn't – she knows about YouTube.
Mm-hmm. So we can just go to page 63 now and see if there's anything there. We're talking about digital hypertext.
Okay, here in the paragraph, the new electric and electronic media are still dependent upon the written medium. No, the Android meme pretends it's still a written medium.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay?
And on the human level of the written medium industry is total panic all the time. Just like there's total panic in TV, all the old analog media, it's a hell of a job to be in those worlds. And then you end up getting arrested for raping everybody, like Harvey Weinstein. All the analog media are in total chaos all the time
mm-hmm.
and just barely surviving and trying to make a quickie big buck somewhere.
It's all about advertising. You know, all the advertisers are scrambling because they don't know where to advertise.
Right. So they're gone, and the Android meme is not advertising to humans. It's advertising among itself. But all of that has been going on for 20, 30 years, so it is at a crisis point. Donald Trump whooped, not the media, he whooped the Android meme.
Mm.
So she says, what? She goes on about secondary orality, which is not cool. And she starts bringing in the structuralist definitions. 100 years ago when de Saussure and the linguists came aboard and they started analyzing the spoken word and the written word because of an obsolete medium, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know how to talk about the new media like the Vortices did. So they analyze and make this whole science of linguistics, and they have a term called parole mm-hmm. versus Lalang, L-A-N-G-U-E. So she starts throwing in some of the structuralist talk.
Mm-hmm.
It is, in fact, a parole or spoken language determined by acoustic and tactile means. That's secondary orality.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to mention the tactility a little bit there, and she mentions iPhones, but this is too much about analog media and the acoustic culture,
mm-hmm.
not the Android meme.
Okay. What about the next start of the next paragraph? This is another paradox which relates to McLuhan's well-known idea of the rearview mirror effect. A new environment, bracket meaning here the complex set of interactions which take place between media and individuals, bracket, not only enables us to fully see the previous environment, but it becomes itself the ground upon which the old medium is then turned into a renewed figure. The old environment is therefore retrieved and turned into an obsolete content.
No, an observable content.
Observable. I took off my... So that's all obsolete.
Yeah, that's all. She is replaying exactly and accurately, which is pretty commendable in itself because people didn't know how to explain McLuhan. They didn't perceive it. But we're fully along, and she's read the McLuhan books and had proper guidance. So she's talking about the cliché to archetype process here, and that's 1970... So it's another museum piece about McLuhan. Like every point we're going to find here, once we appreciate the explaining of McLuhan for those that have no clue about McLuhan, we have to recognize the museum nature of this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she even has the old content dynamic.
Yeah, this is like the content is the rearview mirror for the new form. Now, that was 60s talk by McLuhan. Mm-hmm. Then the user as the content becomes the 70s, but you'll probably bring that in later.
It's right here.
Image, on the same page?
Image it this way, as McLuhan did in his...
on the same page?
Just below it.
Well, that means the next page.
Oh, I see. 63.
Yeah, I'm there.
Imagine it this way, as McLuhan did in his perennial bestseller, Understanding Media. Thought is the content of speech. Speech is the content of written words. Written words are the content of books. Novels are the content of movies. Movies are the content of television. And Trump is the content of Twitter.
No. Trump is the content of Iandom. Iandom's a hidden ground in the Trump world.
Yeah, that's right.
Trump. The Android meme is the content of Iandom. But Trump is close to Iandom, so he trumps the Android meme. So he's a bigger content than the Android meme. Mm-hmm. But for most people, he is just the Android meme. Mm-hmm. They don't know the new hidden ground of Iandom. Mm-hmm. So they've been getting, you notice the commentators over the past year gradually getting used to Trump. They start bringing in McLuhan a little bit, or they go a little beyond McLuhan and they realize he's a Twitter phenomenon, and they begin to see that maybe Bob's right when he says Trump is not even a president.
Mm. And it's so funny to read all the articles now where they quote Trump's Twitter, and then they give an image of the Twitter words. So there's this discontinuity in the articles where it's all peppered with Twitter.
Oh yeah, whenever they quote someone, they always show a photograph of their Twitter post.
Yeah.
And so you got print, then you have to jump to the icon of the Twitter statement, and then back to print.
Yeah. And it's usually just repetitious, but it's just changed the whole dynamic of writing.
Yeah, it's like they have to prove that the person did do a Twitter thing.
And what it's called a screenshot.
Yeah.
So it's a whole new form of writing.
Well, so you're like more and more like reading a page of Finnegan's Wake. It's all fragmented and broken up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And going down toward the last paragraph in 63, McLuhan was not around when the Internet turned planet Earth into a connected globe.
Wait a minute, that must be the next paragraph.
McLuhan was not around.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the next paragraph. Yeah, okay, 64.
McLuhan was not around when the Internet turned planet Earth into a connected globe, but he read Norbert Wiener on cybernetics and understood that the electrified command and control of the computer age would preserve the book nonetheless. He grasped what the new form would do to communication studies and reconfigured its effects and how it would launch the electric tribal circle.
So that's a lot of fanciful dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
McLuhan was not around when the Internet turned planet Earth into a connected globe. Okay, so it was a pretty connected globe under satellite conditions in the 60s.
Mm.
But then the Android meme came in and replayed the global membrane, the connected thing, for itself and not us.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so that... a cybernaut, when you are a ghettoized user, your chemical body's ghettoized for the Internet, you're replaying John Glenn and the astronauts of the 60s.
Mm.
But you're a cybernaut, and you're floating around in the new inner and corpus callosum space. So this is too, you see, because she doesn't give into these extra nuances that I'm giving, the book remains old-fashioned. You know, you have to break apart that sentence, and she should write the sentence and then explain how it's inadequate.
Well, it's a literary book. It's linear. It's literary, and she's trying to define something that's not...
Well, she's trying to make McLuhan still relevant.
Okay.
McLuhan was not around when the Internet turned planet Earth into a connected globe. So Bob would say, McLuhan anticipated when the planet Earth... would be subsumed by a matrix, a monster,
mm-hmm.
that would not connect people but connect its parts and make it a stronger monster. I'd say something like that, mm-hmm. you know. But McLuhan read Norbert Wiener on cybernetics and understood the electrified command and control of the computer age. You know what that is? That's the deep state running the global politics. That's assassinations. That's the Tetrad manager. But you don't get that if it's just a vague statement. The electrified command and control of the computer age would preserve the book nonetheless. No, no book get preserved. The meme of books are what people engage inside the Android meme. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't engage the book the way it was when books were the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You're just having a recombinant commodity experience on a meme level. He grasped what the new form would do to communication studies and reconfigured its effects and how it would launch the electric tribal circle. That's what the Android meme wanted you to think was happening in the 60s, so you wouldn't notice its obsolescing of you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Matrix describes this in the cocooning. They're
in their little tubes.
Yeah.
Virtual tubes. They were dangling gangly. They weren't even humans.
Yeah.
They were dead corpses, you know, and pickled.
So,
you know, I could say living corpses. Their bodies were corpses, and their brains were somehow still activated.
Yeah.
And you dreamt of the electric tribal circle.
I don't know if there's much more, and we are at the end of the chapter. Do you see anything else here to?
Well, just adopting. I'm showing how nice to have this appreciation of McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not dealing with what McLuhan warned about. McLuhan was further along than what his book said. He said in 1968 that the laser beam would wipe off the audience intellect and smear it on the holodeck's floor.
Right.
That's another way of saying you ain't going to be here by 1970.
Right.
Now try to tell that to the young kids that they don't know. McLuhan said the baby boomers live mythically. Mm-hmm. Well, the young kids today don't even get to live, let alone mythically.
And they just say whatever.
Yeah, they're just dangling ganglia. So adopting and adapting strategies derived from modernist explorers, that's the vortices, McLuhan transformed his printed pages into crafty radars detecting and revealing the electric simultaneity. That was already done by and Pound and the vortices. And so, therefore, in the 60s, the Android meme is going to make you think that it still can be done, and it's a breakthrough. So they hooked up McLuhan, who was a museum piece himself, studying museum guides from 50 years before, and replayed their artworks with a little modern spin on it. And the Android meme said, yeah, we're not here yet. We're coming. McLuhan's warning you. But the Android meme was already here in 1960. So what I say about all this.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, the mosaic style of writing is a form of writing that is an open skill. It encourages deep participation. That's what the Android meme needs. It wants you to be deeply participant in an old meme, whereby readers are asked to fill in the gaps so that both knowledge and ignorance play a role in the process. Well, knowledge and ignorance would be, hey, we're all in the same boat. We've been canceled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And McLuhan partly includes that in his Manipian satire. McLuhan's bold associations make resonate both. I think she make resonance?
Make resonant, I guess.
Yeah. McLuhan's bold associations make resonant both what we know and what we do not know. Because McLuhan said you get ahead of the other guy by studying his ignorance, and everybody's ignorant because they don't know the media stuff that McLuhan knew. So he always get ahead of everybody.
Right.
But he also said we don't explore knowledge, we explore our ignorance, because we're in a really post-human situation here, and none of our knowledge applies to the present.
Mm-hmm.
We have to invent new knowledge to pretend we're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Android meme, the Internet, which is the after-image of the Android meme, then provided that for everybody. So McLuhan was imitating the coming role of the Internet, exploring your ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And then she puts it back into book knowledge about, oh, well, this is Francis Bacon's 1600s telling you that the aphorism helps you participate more than direct scientific statement.
Mm.
So she says, it is the application of Bacon's broken knowledge to electric simultaneity, mediated in turn through modernist techniques, that means through the vortices.
Mm-hmm.
The mosaic rhetorical strategies are employed The mosaic rhetorical strategies are employed to convey the complexity of generating knowledge, Well, it's not generating knowledge by the 60s. It's generating slang and trendy fads, what Barry Nevitt called the word of the year. Every year there would be a sort of a theme around a particular word. Even Matt Groening would have in his cartoons in the 80s and 90s, he'd have the main words of the year.
So it's not generating knowledge, it's just generating word association.
The need to know, it's like McLuhan or Zappa told me that time we interviewed him with Bob Marshall in 1988, that he read a book in high school, a science fiction book, where the society demanded you only need to know one word. If you knew that one word, you can function in society. Well, that's expressing the present of the 50s. You had to know what the fad was, what the scene was, mm-hmm. to be able to have dates, mm-hmm. pick up somebody. You had to look conscious of the present. Mm-hmm. It's called being hip. So where was I going to take that? What did you just say? Because I had another point.
Generating
there.
Knowledge is generating word association.
Not word association, generating a word.
Mm-hmm.
What's the new fad? Then that's the way it was in the 70s and 90s. Once you get into where we are today, people have given up knowing the word. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to see if anybody answers their tweet. Mm-hmm. If they get a like, that's community now. Mm-hmm. And that's knowledge. It's nowhere near book knowledge or book categories. And all that McLuhan said, that the old ops, all the categories that people memorize and study, all the specialisms were all obsolete. Finnings and Wake showed that. McLuhan was aware of it, became aware of it, and warned it, and that's where we're at. So your brain is a simulation of book knowledge.
Yeah.
It's not, and it doesn't need to remember it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's all there. Okay, so...
it's all available in the click.
Yeah. If we do not play according to the rhetorician's intention, we behave like I.A. Richards' mathematicians and turn the implicit paideia into a trivial version of Reader's Digest. I thought that was a cute line.
Okay, this is a good statement. The mosaic rhetorical strategies are employed to convey the complexity of generating knowledge. So that's a bit old-fashioned. If we do not play according to the rhetorician's intention, we behave like I.A. Richards, who was a big influence on McLuhan in the 30s at Cambridge, his mathematicians, and turn the implicit paideia. Paideia was a word that Pound used for the new encyclopedic, mm-hmm. or retrieving the golden encyclopedia, into a trivial version of Reader's Digest. Okay, she's sort of contradicting herself because, yeah, we're generating knowledge, but generally it turns into a Reader's Digest kind of trivial, superficial. Imitation of reading books.
Right, so she's grasping that, and then what she says next is about the World Wide Web, and maybe that's coloring what she's saying.
Yeah, a similar risk is always present when exploring the World Wide Web. People don't explore the World Wide Web anymore. They have to go to the toilet of the World Wide Web and engage, just to see if there is any humans left.
Mm-hmm.
We jump from a fragment to the next one, but if we do not make the interval resonate, we flatten our understanding and turn knowledge into information. Well, see, there's an old-fashioned literary bias, as if information is not as important as knowledge. People don't acquire knowledge today. They acquire information, and information is in quotes. Mm-hmm. It is fake news.
Mm-hmm.
We also tend to oversimplify complex issues. Like, she's trying to explain how the chemical body's brain is a little tired here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have chemical body brains anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We also tend to oversimplify complex issues and neglect history of the nature of our stratified memories. So those are all Gutenberg values he's trying to retrieve.
Mm-hmm.
We must look for the archetype in McLuhan's communicative process if we want to preserve an independent critical attitude. You trying to preserve an independent critical attitude, Carol?
No.
No, you're just selling the thing you take so that your brain relaxes and thinks it has an independent critical attitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's what our drops do. Isn't that pretty impressive, Bert, and all the rest of you that are listening? Pretty incredible.
We'll get to you in a minute.
I'm pretty fucking incredible today.
Yeah, you're amazing.
Something which is...
I'll make you a pizza, Bob.
Yeah, an independent critical attitude. Something which is, in fact, the greatest challenge in a world saturated by hyper-reality and corporate simulacra. So she still thinks there's still an attempt to get the critical attitude. And she's up to date a bit by saying it's a big challenge to even find a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But that's... describing 1992,
mm-hmm.
not 2018. In the late 1950s, okay, well, maybe...
We don't I don't know if you want to read the whole thing.
No, but in the late 1950s, McLuhan suggested that in order to counterbalance the side effects of media already active outside the classroom and turning students into consumers, the co-authors of information and knowledge, teachers and scholars, should no longer be the source of data, but of insight.
That didn't work. It just went to data with the Internet and Facebook and Twitter. There is no insight.
And that's what I'm going to end this session with, this quote that I have, that I posted. McLuhan goes further than this. Teachers should be not the source of data, but of insight or pattern recognition. And, of course, that's obsolesced by the Android meme. All right?
Yeah.
Consistently, McLuhan's probes do not translate data, but the dynamics underpinning the probing process, of which the mosaic is the interactive playground. So he does not translate data, but the dynamics underpinning the probing process, in other words, pattern, constant renewing pattern recognition, she's correct about that, of which the mosaic is the interactive playground. She's describing how McLuhan had the perfect poetry of the day. He had perfect pitch. He was the greatest poet of his time. She's defining him correctly. But unfortunately, McLuhan was just an extension of the Android meme in his perfection. But she's stating it accurately what he did,
mm-hmm.
moving beyond data, and which are literate categories. Mm-hmm. We've got endless words and categories fit in from the specialist Gutenberg Gauss effect, whereas the blur, or what Trump calls the fake news, is what was really the audience getting the act from the 60s to now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fake news now is that human pattern recognition is now beyond fake.
Mm-hmm.
And so Trump can make it a political issue of claiming anything out there that's trying to interpret him is fake pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying they're all no longer genuine fakes because the new Iron Dome has bypassed the genuine fake of pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So
what quote are you talking about?
Okay, so I got to go over here, and this is an article that McLuhan wrote in 1968 for a magazine in Toronto called This Magazine is About Schools. Okay, so it was many people were trying to reform education in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that the book and what was happening wasn't working, so there were a lot of alternative schools built.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Minimax, Brian went to the SEED program in Toronto. That was the alternative schools, were
mm-hmm.
sort of built on the Summerhill School in England.
Uh-huh.
A lot more freedom.
Yeah.
So This Magazine is About Schools was a magazine dealing with that. It was like a new industry. Well, they dropped the is About Schools, and it just became this magazine in the 80s, and they're the one that interviewed you and I, and we were in
mm-hmm.
in 1992 about. I got to take a drink just a minute.
Here's water right here.
So that's a dramatic pause
mm-hmm.
and the resonant interval.
Mm-hmm.
So McLuhan, in an early issue of This Magazine is About Schools, did an article in 1968 called Adopt a College.
Your microphone changed places.
What's that mean?
I don't hear you as loudly as I was.
Oh, I put my... Why did I put this down?
To drink.
Oh, yeah. See, can't even remember the immediate present. So, we're going to go into this, and this will be at the end. There's a few people here ready to talk, I assume. And but before we let them in, let's just go to this part. So do I have to make I can read it. So the article was introduced with this statement. Adopt a College was an advertisement where colleges were looking for university presidents.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were finding it hard to find people in the riotous university atmosphere for its day of the 60s, you know, tame compared to now. But they were looking for presidents or executives to come and be president and adopt a college, like a kid, right?
Yeah.
So McLuhan says, the title of this essay is the theme of an advertisement in a current magazine. There are hundreds of colleges and universities in America today that cannot obtain a president at any price. So he goes into, well, I'll just read the first part. I'm not reading the whole article, but he says, one strategy for encountering the new student curiosity and intrusiveness, like having teach-ins, I'm adding that part. One strategy for encountering the new student curiosity and intrusiveness regarding the conduct of schools and colleges could be called judo. So he's going to recommend a judo-like strategy. Instead of listening to these students' grievances concerning the form of education which they consider sterile and distasteful, instead of allowing them, the students, to get a foot in the door and find a place in some of the many committees, they could simply be invited into the schools en masse. Okay? So this is what he's proposing to Trudeau, to Claude Bissell, the president of University of Toronto, and anybody else who would listen, to all the executives who are trying to tetrad manage crudely the world. They were never as good as the CIA. He's saying, okay, we got a real problem. All these students want to take over the schools and make the schools in their image. And McLuhan said they'll just end up in many committees, end up stuck in the bureaucracy. So he says, let's bypass this with this suggestion. He says to the students as they raid the university because they think they're going to take over, Carol.
Yeah.
Here's what he says.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, addressing the students, it's all yours. The entire administration and staff will take a sabbatical. You can rearrange the entire curriculum and teaching procedures in any way you see fit. We will continue to draw our checks. You will receive nothing. On the other hand, you will be charged nothing. This will be free education. During the year that lies ahead, you will have full opportunity to acquaint yourselves with the functions of a university or a high school, both past and present. Then he says, the present educational arrangements are indeed hardware, which is what the students are objecting to, inherited from earlier centuries. Then I got to go to the next page. Most of this hardware is of 19th century vintage, but phonetic literacy and mathematics date mostly from the 5th century Athens. It is this hardware that you regard naturally as the enemy, because you live unconsciously in a new environment of electric software or information. This new environment has eliminated your identity image. See, telling these students why they want to take over. As any new environment does with any individual or group, new environments are always invisible. It is the preceding environment that is always blamed for the damage done by the new one. Then he goes into the history of education, going from Plato to the Gutenberg phase, you know, runs through a history of the Gutenberg galaxy, basically. And, okay, let me just click this just a second and put that back there. And that goes there. And then page 3, he keeps going on. I'll just read in the middle a section. He says, the next 2,500 years after Plato, so that's 500 BC, saw many variations on the Platonic program of individual enterprise and education. There grew up, especially in Roman times, the concept of eloquence as wisdom. The doctus orator was a new concept, developed by Cicero especially, and translated to the Middle Ages and the Renaissance by St. Augustine, who was one of the greatest orators of his time in this learned sense. The ideal of eloquence as a learned wisdom was inseparable from, and he gives a phrase, Iguclio's paideia. Remember we read the pound word paideia? Yeah, so that's defined as, I guess that's Latin, for encyclopedia, the circle of the sciences. Then he says, it was this conception of the integral nature of knowledge as a total field that led to the program called the Trivium and the Quadrivium. That's what McLuhan did his PhD on, at least on the Trivium. In effect, this program persisted until the Renaissance, when it blossomed as never before. Printing gave much greater access to the encyclopedia of the arts and sciences than the written word had been able to do. The program continued in England and Europe well into the 18th century. That's the Trivium and Quadrivium. Gradually, however, new scientific knowledge created specialisms that broke up the unity of the encyclopedic ideal of the Tribune and Quadrivium. Even in the 19th century, the scientists shared a classical training with their colleagues in the arts, so they were a bit had humanistic knowledge, and there persists today in the sciences a preference for Greek terminology that does not reflect any philological or philological competence. See, he's explaining why all these stupid Latin words in biology. The educational establishment built around the concept of encyclopedic wisdom naturally depended upon writing or hardware. The old establishment that Plato attacked was pre-literate software. That was the oral Homeric culture. It had been oral and communal and kind of showbiz before Greece. Rome and medieval education depended much more on hardware, on writing and paper and parchment. It also depended on travel and transportation of these materials as opposed to Plato's day. Plato and Aristotle had developed their universities on the idea of the static city-state. The Romans and medieval ideal had been more mobile and federal. Then he jumps to the present. Today, with the coming of the new electric software, both time and space have disappeared. See, there's your chemical body, Carol. Remember, Ion says that. McLuhan was saying that back in the 50s. Today, with the coming of the new electric software, both time and space have disappeared so far as access to information is concerned. We can learn about any period anywhere in the world. Moreover, software tends to be post-literate. Electric images easily supplant the printed hardware. The instamatic character of these images destroys goal orientation in education. Specialism and private directions for private careers quickly lose their relevance and confuse the vision and energies of all participants in the existing educational and commercial structures alike. The military establishment is even more confused by a technology that permits total civilian participation in all military enterprises. In other words, they got mad that everybody protested Vietnam because they didn't notice that Vietnam was fought in everybody's living room. They're still living in the 19th century in their military goals. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, so he's just summing up what some of the electric effects are. And then he says to the students who are now entering the university so they can take it over, right? Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we are turning over the educational establishment to you at a time that is more transitional than any other encountered in any phase of human history. You have lost your sense of identity. You blame the old hardware because you cannot see the new surroundings, or perivallo, Latin or Greek word, that has numbed your faculties. They've been numbed by the new environment. So they think the new environment is the old environment, and they don't think it's being run right, so they want to go take over the old hardware environment and run it correctly. Underneath the impetus of the tribalism, okay? New electric neo-tribalism. So McLuhan is warning them. It may be of some use to you to know that the educational budget of big industry and the armed services is 20 to 30 times that of the communal education budget. There are many more highly trained minds at such places as General Electric, IBM, General Motors, and AT&T, and on Madison Avenue than there are on all our campuses put together. These men are loaded with guilt feelings. Now, guilt is spelled G-I-L-T. That means they're in their glamorous, Trump-like executive suites, the gilded cage.
Gold and silver.
Yeah, gold and silver cages, isolated from the world in their million-dollar salaries, and they want to get involved because the global membrane makes everybody want to get involved. So McLuhan says all these executives, rich executives, want to get into education. I think he's going to say here, hey, students, don't go bring in any of these old professors here. They're obsolete. Get these executives if you want to talk to anybody, if you dare to listen. So he says, these men are smarter than anybody on all the campuses put together. These men are loaded with guilt feelings. They are also bored. Now, he's saying this right in front of these executives. This is being said to educational committees. Teachers associations. McLuhan's telling them how they're so obsolete they are. I mean, he told Trudeau, just open the universities and let the kids come in and just bullshit. Just talk and have bullshit sessions. But he's being a little more programmed here. He says, we're going to do it for a year. But if you want to have some interesting co-bullshitters, bring in the executives from the industries who are, he says, are bored. And they would love to get back onto a university campus or into a high school where they could become involved in sharing the learning process with students. Now, this is also McLuhan being a satirist. This is the Lolita syndrome. All these executives have dumped their wives, and they want to get access to these young girls who are giving it away for free. Obsolescing the call girl, as Ion says. But he's not going to be that blatant, but they want to become involved in sharing the learning process with students. And a lot of these guys did that. Okay, they went back, since they couldn't take over in Clarence the way the McLuhan wanted, they went back to school and hung out and took courses on stupid stuff, became craftsmen in ceramics to meet young people who were incredibly irresponsible in the way they used their bodies, not to be ignored. So he says to the students, since you will receive no money for your educational efforts in this experimental year and will have no budget to hire staff, you may find it exciting to enlist the volunteer services of this vast, unacknowledged body of learned men who created the new software environment that has eliminated your sense of identity. So he's telling them to bring in the enemy that fucked up their literate world so they can't have just be agitated, caught in a void between a world that has died and a world that can't be born, is what he said about students in the 60s. So why not bring in the CIA guys who irresponsibly caused this technological identity crisis? Reading it again. Since you will receive no money for your educational efforts in this experimental year, and you will have no budget to hire Elena Lamberti and Lance Strait and all the Media College Association, you may find it exciting to enlist the volunteer service of the vast, unacknowledged body of learned men from the Secret Council 10, led by Bob Dobbs, who have created this new software environment, or IONDOM environment, that has eliminated your sense of identity. For it is this, back to the 60s, we're not going into the IONDOM effect here yet, for it is the loss of identity in the 60s that inspires violence. He has violence in quotes. Your struggles, because they're being violent, even though they think they're expanding their awareness, they're actually being environment, because they're somnambulists, not understanding where their pain's coming from. Your struggles have no goals. Not one of you could articulate a single objective for all your unrest and uncertainty. Without knowing it, you are questing for a new identity which cannot be private and which cannot be known until it has actually been made. You are questing for a new identity which cannot be private and which cannot be known until it has actually been made. We, meaning the old fogies who fought World War II, right? All the guys born in the teens and 20s and 30s, we will now retire from the scene for 1 year, leaving the reshaping of it to your splendid energies. A year from now, we shall inspect the fruit of your endeavors with the most benign curiosity. It has often been said that every breakdown is a breakthrough. We have broken down. The breakthrough is all yours. Good luck. So he's appealing to his buddies who have to, if they're honest, give up. So he's taking one last swipe at the students who are unconsciously motivated some of them to go take over institutions and really get in trouble with them among themselves. So you know what they did? The students along dropped out, went into rock, went into communes, went all over the place, became wandering gypsy scholars in a global international motley, McLuhan called them, trying to find out what to fit in. And if they're lucky, they ended up at Andy Warhol's factory, and like Joe Alessandro, I think that was his name, you know, became a porn star in Andy Warhol movies. Or like Candy, whatever those Warhol superstar girls were. And they all became junkies and died, right? See? So it's pretty dangerous out there in the corporate jungle. And the CIA is just taking over the drug trade at that point. So he says, good luck. Then he speaks to the assembled men that he's urging them to give this stuff to the kids, right? He says, such a judo move. Remember he mentioned the new strategy of judo? Let the kids run in and let them fall into the, that's judo, right? They let you take a swipe at you. You let them take a swipe at you and then they fall into the swipe. You step aside. So, you stoop to conquer. So, he's saying that all that he's offering the students, this whole year of running the education system, is a judo move. He says, such a judo move requiring total participation of the dissatisfied students in a creative enterprise might produce some amazing and permanently valuable results. Not saying it will, but it might. It would certainly be a very great ending statement. It would certainly be a very wasteful enterprise in many respects. It could be a waste of time, but he says, but that would not be new. But that would not be new. In other words, it's already a wasteful fucking enterprise. Nobody's getting properly educated in any ways. Remember, he suggested back in the 40s, if you want to turn them off the pop culture they're into, the advertising movies and that, and radio music, test them on it. Don't test them on Shakespeare, and they'll rebel against this stuff because you're testing on it, and they'll start reading Shakespeare, if that's what you really want. So anyways, he's saying it's already a waste, and if we allow this program, yes, there'll be a lot of ridiculous spastic situations, but it won't be as wasteful as the organized society of the educational department right now. So, isn't that an incredible statement? All right.
Yeah,
so,
I hope Reiner's listening to that.
Well, let's go see. So we end our wonderful probe of Marsh McLuhan's Mosaic, written by Elena Lamberti, a forlorn professor stuck there in Bologna trying to write novels about New York City, is what she's doing right now. Still doing books, unfortunately.
And we've come up to chapter 3.
Yes. So we have here Ginny and Greg. We have Madeline, and we have Jean. And unfortunately, we can't let little Sarah in because her phone causes such a noise that we don't hear but ends up on the recording. It's been a problem the last couple weeks that I'm not taking the chance until we test Sarah's phone somehow and check the recording. Maybe we'll do it later. Just take a section, see the timing, have her talk, and see if the buzz is still there. Okay, so it has been an awesome seminar because I got to spout off a lot of avant-garde stuff with the support of cheerleading of Carolyn. So Jean, Madeline, and Ginny or Greg, what do you have to say in response?
Good job.
Good job. Good job, says Madeline. Thank you, Madeline. And Jean.
Oh, Madeline.
Now,
Madeline said, dear God, because that was
kind of
blurred.
They said, good job. Well, you said
I'm
good
sure,
job.
I'm sure it was.
Yes. But are you a dangling ganglia, Madeline, right now?
I am sorry, dangling in the wind.
Now, is this due to private things in your own gypsy life of the past week or because of what you just heard?
It's because of what I just heard.
Oh, isn't that awesome what McLuhan did?
I don't know.
It sounds irresponsible to you, eh?
No, well, in a sense.
Can you imagine your parents hearing this guy saying, give up the school for a year to all the nuts out there? Because the parents need the schools to get the students out of their hands, out of their home. They have schools so they, right? So they can go to work.
Yeah.
They want the schools to be babysitters.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, you know, Edgar C. Friedman, I'll just say this, Edgar C. Friedman, a great professor. What? Go ahead.
Oh, my dad actually retired early because of that. He couldn't teach the kids anymore, and he couldn't deal with... He tried to help the kids that were all fucked up, and the parents wanted no part of it, and it was heartbreaking and frustrating to him, and he was like, fuck it, I'm out.
But he was a teacher. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was.
What years did he teach? High school?
Elementary school.
Oh, and they were already fucked up by then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what decade was this? The 70s and 80s?
60s, 70s, and 80s, yeah.
Right. So so he had an old-fashioned book humanist intention, right? He was trying to help people. But
he did, and by the 80s, yes, he was. And by the 80s, it was hopeless, and he quit.
Well, were there many other peers of his that quit, or was he unique?
There actually were. I don't know about many, but I know it was a pretty small school, and a couple of others did as well.
Right. It was just impossible. And it was impossible. In other words, yeah. It was a fucking waste of time, like McLuhan ended his speech with, and we got to do something more drastic, like open it up to them so the kids recognize what the hell, that they're not going to accomplish their goals they think they have by getting rid of hardware, you know, because it's a bigger problem than the students realize. So it's not so much of a waste to have them spend a year to realize what the problem the parents have or the teachers have. So it was making them aware of the environment. So it was a good idea, but the waste was already happening, as your father realized. And why not try what McLuhan suggested?
Yeah, I don't think it had sunk in. Like, now I think everybody realizes how bad the education system is.
Right.
And a lot of people realize that the whole job thing is a farce as well, or, you know, just not doesn't get you anywhere. But I think at that time, oh, shit. I derailed my train of thought.
Well, we're talking about how bad it is. Everybody realizes it, but for industry,
they didn't quite yet then. It wasn't.
No.
It was just starting, yeah.
Well, now, industry can't get kids to work. I mean, it's, again, for selfish reasons they're waking up. They can't get the next generation to be competent in whatever tasks are required in these corporations and stuff, right? And they can only hire a certain number of digitally handy kids, and that means, so if you just keep it that way, then only a few kids get the jobs, the ones who are good at the whatever the digital tasks are, and the rest of them are fucking, what are they going to do, right? So we really got a really bad problem that McLuhan was a prophet seeing coming.
Yeah.
I mean, he was saying people, the students can't read, they're a whole different sensibility. In practical terms, that wasn't true. The baby boomers could read. They had this electric pressure on them. But now, you know, the grandchildren of the boomers are living the way McLuhan's talking about, because they're inside the Android meme and they're not even here anymore. And McLuhan was talking as if it already was the planet of the dead. So it's become the planet of the dead by, you know, last 10 years. And so he was a prophet of that.
Yeah, that's what blows my mind consistently with him, is how far ahead he saw, and I can see even how it was already a reality then. For him, it wasn't that much of a stretch, but for me to see it, contrast has to get a lot stronger.
Yes. As a matter of fact, they've got a problem now, industry, and they ain't going to solve it, because they're only still looking in the rearview mirror. These kids are going to live, I don't know, they're not even going to live. I don't know what's, well, you know, it's the end of the world is what's happening. It's the end of culture. Everybody right now thinks that Trump is going to end the world. We're going to have war in the Middle East, that North Korea is fooling him, and Russia will take over. That's, in other words, they realize it's way beyond control.
Only is Trump going to end it, but not only is Trump going to end it, but it deserves to be ended, is the feeling.
But what? Who feels it deserves? The world deserves to be ended. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, a lot of people,
a lot of older people believe that.
Yeah, and people might. Well, I guess I'm older. Shit.
Yeah, you're older now. You're over the hill when you're 23. But see, you know why you don't know you're old? It's because in the chip body, everybody's the same age. You know, 4 years old. It's only in the chemical, only 1/5 of you is old, Madeline.
Right.
Yep. Well, nobody grows up here, Bob.
That's right. What, you mean in Minnesota, where you are?
No. No.
I don't know. I might feel when I know how to drive.
In Dobstown, yes, Bob, the only guy who remained 4 years old for 96 years.
That's why
I am the child that leads. Didn't the Bible predict that?
Yes.
A child will come among you, and it'll be a monster child. Well, I certainly act that out. But it is important. See, I can see why. I mean, I was reading McLuhan since the 50s. I really could see how he prepared me for where we got to and for ION, because you had to think about it. You could say, this guy fucking nuts? Is it that far gone? Is it Planet of the Dead? But fortunately, you had LaRouche, Zappa, and other sources supplementing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For me. And I had my own experience in the Secret Council 10, which was pretty impersonal, pretty horrifying, what we had to do, you know, doing global tetrad management. So, but I picked the right people to remind me of how bad it was, so to speak.
Oh.
So that's what we do here. You have to study Bob's stuff. We have to take you back. Well, you didn't have a chance because you didn't exist. Now we prop up a fake brain so that you can remember the virtual history that's on my chart by doing McLuhan. I'm reading stuff from 60 years ago, which you're shocked by, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate the explanation of the propping up of the fake brain.
Yeah. So Gene, if Gene wanted to talk, I don't know, maybe if Madeline, let Madeline take a break. If she wants to keep talking, go ahead, but we understand why you need to take a break, Madeline. I have a better image of your father now. Didn't know he was actually trying to do something. I thought he was just pissed off all the time.
Oh, that's part of the reason.
Yeah. Very it caused an identity crisis. So Jean said that she read something that she wants to go over. What was it, Jean?
Oh, I listened to parts 3, 4, and 5 of the interview with Nigel Lennon.
Oh, Nigel Lennon, one of Zappa's mistresses. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
The something of the dog root. The secrets of the dog root?
Yes.
Yeah, how did you find that? Where is that?
It was really good. It was posted on Ion and Bob today. And
Ed did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ed probably did it. Okay, yeah, that's... what do you want me to say about Nigel? We need to explain a bit?
Yes, do, because when I hit play, it was on part 3 somehow. So I didn't hear parts 1 and 2, which is another couple hours. And
right, is this all audio?
Yeah, it's their YouTubes. Yeah, video.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Bob. It's video. The first two, you're behind a microphone, and it's more like a radio station setup.
Oh, no, that's the DEF CON Bob, the documentary made in 2005 of my Bob tour in L.A. in 2005.
Nope, this is Bob
minutes.
Dobbs. This is Bob Dobbs and Nigel Lennon talk about Frank Zappa, August 7th, 95.
And it's a recording?
Yeah, it's the top thing on Ion and Bob.
Wow, that must have been released by Jerry Fialka, because we did it at his home in Venice Beach.
Yes.
He probably taped it, but we transcribed it, or somebody transcribed it, and that's what's out on the internet. I can't believe it, that the audio is out there. I don't...
Oh,
is the,
it's
is it,
good. It's so good. And
oh,
I
yeah,
haven't even heard
see.
The first two parts.
Yeah, the timeline. Let me go over to my timeline, because that's where... No, I just want to see if what I saw on my timeline. Well, what the heck do I think I have? If I have audio on my timeline, how'd that happen?
It is on your timeline.
Right, so that's Nigel put that in. So parts 1, it is. Is it a video?
Yes.
I can't believe this. I totally forgot about all that existed. Yeah, it's at her home. We did Jerry, and then we went to her place. Now Nigel just died last year. She's gone. But
2016.
Right. 2 years ago, I guess. So, Nigel's a pretty interesting story. That's incredible. I thought I lost the transcript a few years ago. I was really happy to re-find the transcript. I didn't know he had fucking video of it, so, and it may not be everything that's in the transcript, because I think there's a part of the transcript that's missing. See, it started off, OK, Okay, so Nagy's book comes out about 95, and it's called Being Frank. It's a nice pun, okay? She's being frank about her relationship with Frank, which nobody knew about, really, unless they were close friends of Nagy. And she really got flack from the Zappa fanatics for ruining the image of Zappa having a happy marriage. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And there's... people knew that Zappa had groupies, but they didn't know that women could move into the basement and live there while Gail was upstairs, which is what she did in 19... 19-